Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 709?
Close.
710?
7,000 episodes, gentlemen. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, that's a quad didge.
That's quad didge, baby. Quad didge.
Yeah. Band of bros.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And we have a guest today joining us via the magic of ZoomTube. Hello.
Hi.
Introduce yourself.
I'm Matthew St. Clair. I'm a freelance film journalist who can primarily be seen on The Film Experience and Awards Watch. And I also have my own newsletter on Substack, Cinematic Words of a Chaotic Gemini, because I'm a huge cinema guy and I'm a Gemini, so.
Oh, there now we that go. Is brilliant marketing.
Ta-da!
Yes, I like that. The branding, yes. And I saw Matt had seen this movie. You know, we're friends on Facebook, and mm-hmm. I had seen him post his review, and I'm like, okay, good. I'm telling you right now, this movie, I did not expect it to be this good, but it's pretty funny.
It's really funny.
It is very, very funny.
It's very, very funny.
I totally agree.
Matt really enjoyed the movie from what I took from his review and his social media postings. Am I correct?
Definitely. I saw the movie back at TIFF. Oh. And I want to relive the experience of seeing the movie there.
It's awesome.
Because for one, seeing it with a lively crowd was pretty neat, but also just for the sheer enjoyment of it.
You saw this again at regular release?
I haven't. I was actually going to, but I was going to yesterday, but then I saw my local Cineplex was having a double feature of Mummy and Bride of Frankenstein.
That's a win.
I just could not pass that up.
No, I don't blame you at all. That's a big old win.
Yeah, but I bet this one will be fun with a crowd. But okay, I'll let you do your plugs real quick.
Okay, before we get to end everything, shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find a podcast, you can find us. While you're there, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. That's super helpful and greatly appreciated. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. The group is called the League of Show Shares because we're hoping we'll share an episode. I actually have them this week.
Oh, you
hey! Yeah, that's good.
We're professionals.
Yeah. So people who were kind enough to share an episode include Librarian, Cynthia, Josh, Rosen, Christopher Rex, Chris Valls, Heather Sachs, Julianne Jordan, Gabriel Lugo, Tammy, Lynn Powers, Betts, Glenn Cougar, Mellon Brewer, Travis Tewitt, Leanne Boutisi.
Hey, I know that person.
Yeah. Who is? Biblically.
Is that the person that's always on YouTube commenting about that
she
Joe
did,
guy?
She did once.
Oddly enough, no.
Oh, okay.
Chris Magic Man, Chris Williams, Edit Photo Gamer, L is not. It used to be L is not well, and now it's L is not. So
all right.
She's not okay, but she's
better
no
than
longer
well?
Not well. Okay. So that's good.
I'll take it.
I'll take that as I'll count that as a win. Mike and Oscar, Vertigay 314, Invasion of the Remake, Linda Wright, Kathia Woods, D.W. Lundberg, Binge Movies, In Session Film, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd Podcast, Feelin' Film, Ronnie Castle, Matt Naglia, and Geek to Me Radio. So thank you very much. And finally, don't forget that we have a Patreon where for $5 a month, you can get all sorts of bonus content and you will secretly know that we like you extra, but it's not a secret.
And you'll find out what they're talking about there as soon as we do, because I don't know if they're doing Evil Dead the series. I don't know if they're doing Hellraiser.
Matt had some stuff. I had some stuff. We weren't able to record this week, but don't worry. There's
the Hellraiser Saturday morning cartoon.
I mean, sign me up.
They gave me an hour notice they weren't recording on Friday, so that was nice.
In our defense.
He said, hey, just to let you know.
We both knew we weren't recording 3 or 4 days prior to that.
Oh.
And that's on me. Like, that was on me.
Interesting.
He texted me, and I was like, oh, no, that's perfect. I have my nephew, and then I forgot.
You forgot that I was on the show?
Yes.
Oh, well, glad I didn't move my schedule around.
Yes. So, anyway, there's all that. Let's dig in, shall we?
So, this movie was really fun, and the only thing that I have to say from my experience is I wish I had seen this with a crowd, much like when I had seen the last movie. And
Barbarian?
I was like, yeah, and I wish I saw it with a crowd, because comedy's like this.
Yeah.
And the laughter is infectious. And I thought it was a very fun movie. But did you guys end up getting to see it with a crowd?
Yeah, I saw a press screening, but luckily it wasn't a press screening with critics.
With just, okay, because I was going to say.
Yeah, no, like there were clearly a lot of people from the gay community had been invited, and so it was definitely like they were having a blast with it, which made it more enjoyable.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
For sure.
Cool.
I mean, I had other people in the theater, but it wasn't a crowd. It was like one row of people, and then that was it. I saw it like late on Thursday night.
And they were all there to protest.
I mean, you know, given where I was in the theater or
in the country.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They definitely, the whole row in front of us were having a good time for sure. And that helped. That definitely, like you said, I think comedies, horror films, like you both kind of need those two like genres you need to see with an audience.
Yeah.
Is the best possible way to see those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I had a big crowd, but it was me and Katie, and then there was a group of four guys in the front, and then there was one woman to our right. It was like five other people in the theater. We were all enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like it's interesting because to me this felt like a very old school romantic comedy.
The beats of it are very much old school romantic comedy.
Yeah.
But the meat of it, the dressing, it isn't.
Yeah.
Right? And like
the
that's what makes it feel fresh.
With a little Apatow twist to it, like the Apatow raunch,
yeah,
I guess is the best. Because there are some scenes, there's just, I mean, they don't shy away from anything.
For
and
sure.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like the way that they are integrated into the movie. I will say the only thing, kind of like in some of the romantic comedies of old, the love interest is kind of bland.
Yeah.
And that was my only complaint, is that I felt like Billy Eichner was so good that he overshadowed the dude who played the love interest. And he just kind of felt like he was, I mean, window dressing. And he's a good looking dude.
I thought he was charismatic.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe it was just I just think sometimes you get an actor that just has like that pop of charisma that he kind of can overshadow everybody. And I think Billy Eichner is that guy where he's just so omnipresent on screen.
Well, of course. Yeah,
but he's a big person.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so Luke McFarlane is the actor who plays.
No relation to Todd.
No. Well, I don't know.
I guess that's true.
Not that I know of, but he has been in several Hallmark movies. So
which that makes
I mean, he
that's
looks like
yes.
the leading man out of a Hallmark movie, and I thought it was funny when they had the parody of the Hallmark type of stuff in there. But I think it was clearly he was cast for that reason. But
I didn't realize that. That's pretty good.
But he's very chiseled jaw, very
and he's
obviously
ripped,
in good shape
shreds,
and everything.
Yes.
So he's a handsome guy.
He's Jesse Eisenberg to Channing Tatum's Michael Cera.
Oh, interesting.
The whole time I just kept thinking, like, they couldn't get Channing Tatum.
Oh, you thought he was not Channing Tatum.
Right.
I was trying to, there was, at first, Katie.
Scott Eastwood.
Yeah,
Katie
called him not Scott Eastwood, because she goes, no, Scott Eastwood is in this, and then he gets at the club, and then he gets closer to the camera, and she goes, I'm starting to second guess myself. But that's exactly what she called him, was more Scott Eastwood. But I could see, like, with the chiseled jaw and the athletic shape and everything.
Yeah.
Matt, what did you think of the casting, and also, as far as a member of the gay community, how do you think that the subject matter was handled?
quite well. As for Luke McFarlane, well, for one, he's a better actor than Scott Eastwood.
Yeah. Oh. No arguments from us here.
Just putting that out there. Yeah. But also, I think with Luke McFarlane, I guess one reason I love his performance so much is that I feel like I can sort of identify with him, just someone who is gladly out, yet still has the slightly feeling of being an outsider because he doesn't seem like a typical gay person. Like,
yeah.
Because, I mean, because of, hopefully this doesn't come out wrong, but even I, because I don't seem like a typical gay person because of my affinity for sports and my music, like alternative rock, like Gin Blossoms and Lifehouse. I'm like, this feeling like, do I conform? But the message I took away from it is that no matter gay people, no matter how they present themselves, shouldn't have to feel like they're performing or straight acting. They can be like, you can love going to the gym and sports and want to be a chocolatier,
right?
For like, sure.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean,
so that's what I mean, the movie has many things of his mind, but that's the one on its mind, but that's the one message that really struck me.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because it's like, I struggle with that from the opposite direction, that like, I'm not gay, spoiler, but I love musicals and I hate sports, and like my own dad at one point asked me,
oh really?
Yeah. It, like, are you gay? And
oh,
I'm like,
man.
No, I'm just really not good with women. Like but he was just like, but you're in all the plays, and you, and I'm just like, well, that doesn't
link up, Dad.
That's not a one-to-one
thing, right,
you know? And but so it's interesting to hear you struggle with it from the opposite end of the spectrum.
It is, it like,
and I love the alt rock.
Yeah, you do.
I do have that part.
That's a given.
I got the alt rock gene.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Attaboy. It is interesting though. Like, I do think that, Matt, to your point, is I think that film has kind of always done the stereotypical gay dude, right? Yeah. Like, they've always kind of leaned into that. So to see, what's the guy's name? Luke McFarlane. To see like this character not do any of that, and Billy Eichner, obviously, I don't think this is much of a stretch of a character for him.
Well,
I think he's playing himself.
Well, I think it was interesting when in this movie at times they say the whole tone it down thing, which I get what they're trying to say, but I'm like, this Billy Eichner is way more reserved than the Billy Eichner TV personality.
Well, like, and true. Like, I'm like, Billy Eichner does need to tone it down, but not the gay stuff.
No, the energy stuff.
Like,
it's like
I referred to him the other day as somebody I was trying to explain to someone who wasn't familiar who he was, and I was like, he's like the gay Bobcat Goldthwait, right? Like, there's just lots of yelling.
Yeah,
just
and that's, so that's what I thought
just
was.
Always at 11.
Yeah.
And so I know in this movie, when they say tone it down, they didn't even really necessarily mean the gay stuff. They meant like the personality, and your mouth keeps running and talking and everything. And I was thinking, man, this is the most subdued performance I've ever seen of Billy Eichner.
Yeah, watching him in like Billy on the Street or The Office.
Well, I mean, because Billy on the Street,
Parks and Rec. Yeah, sorry.
And Billy on the Street, he's just running up to people and yelling in their faces. That is literally, that is his character for his most famous thing.
Right.
But I thought he was really good. Circling back to the message of the movie, I thought what Matt said was beautiful, because that's one of the main takeaways that I brought from it, was that we're all people, right? It doesn't matter your sexual orientation. Like, that doesn't define you. And the things that you like, I mean, that's just a part of being a human. You like this music or working out or sports or podcasting or interviews, whatever you do. And it's not like you shouldn't have to conform to this because it's a stereotype, or this is the majority of one person acts like this, whatever. And I thought that was so great. And to show a character like, first of all, to have the leading couple in a romantic comedy of a studio film be gay.
Okay.
And then played by gay actors.
Yeah.
And then the message that they're trying to push here about, you know, don't change who you are. Don't lie about yourself. Be yourself, right? And that message, I just thought it was wonderfully handled in the way that felt very authentic and not preachy.
Yeah.
You know? And
well, what I liked about it is it didn't straight wash what the gay lifestyle looks
like. That's true.
And I'm not going to lie, the only thing I really know about the gay lifestyle, as it were, is what I know from listening to Savage Love, right?
Sure.
But I do know from that like, it's different in that, and you see this in the movie, that in terms of open relationships, and not that every gay couple has one, but it's not uncommon,
right,
in a way that you don't see it in the straight community, or at least the straight community doesn't let you see it.
There it is.
Right, there's that.
Yeah, right.
And so I thought it was nice to see that, and I think that probably will be off-putting to some people, or it will be new information for some people. But I thought that was really smart and brave to, like, I'm not going to dial this down for the straight crowd.
Yeah, so I guess that's my question. Is this written and directed or written by a gay dude?
It's written by him, isn't it?
Is it Billy?
But I thought there was somebody else.
Nicholas Stoller.
Oh, okay.
Who directed?
Yeah, Nicholas Stoller is, I believe, is straight, and he co-wrote the script with Billy Eichner.
Okay, but I think that's also the factor, right? We kind of talked about there was something we just reviewed where it's like it came from a woman's point of view. I wish I could remember what it was, but it felt, even though it came from a woman's point of view, maybe it was
a Barbarian.
Don't worry, darling, because
it was written
by the Van Dyke grandchildren.
That's
and
what
then
it was.
She took it
and then kind of redid
and wrote
it and,
yeah,
and mucked it up a little for, well, that's either here or there. You listen to the episode. It's But I think having that point of view does make it more real.
Yeah.
And not, you know, straight washing it.
Matt, overall, did you feel that their representation, what Billy Eichner was writing about, just the dating and the, you know, just all these things, did it feel authentic to you?
Yeah. I won't go into too much detail, but I've had my experience dating men with who have been from open relationships. So it is fairly accurate. And I do admire just how unapologetically frank it is, and it's and it's sexual content, because you don't, I guess that's one thing about it that's so groundbreaking, because on a mainstream gay rom-com like this, you don't see that kind of, you don't see that kind of gay sexual content.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because like we were saying, this being a studio romantic comedy, they easily could just say, here, the two lead characters are gay, and then just put them in every romantic.
They could take a Sandra Bullock script and just be like, make her a dude, go.
Right.
And they didn't
focus on any of the other parts of the gay lifestyle, any of the like when he has Grindr and that kind of stuff, and going to the club. Like, they actually tailored it to different experiences instead of, like you said, search and replace to, it's just a gay love interest instead of straight.
Right.
I think it's kind of the guess who's coming to dinner of vacation of gay people, right?
Okay.
Like when Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, Sidney Poitier, Spencer Tracy, Katherine Hepburn,
Bernie Mac, and Ashton Kutcher. I get you.
Remake. Yes. But, that was a groundbreaking film for its time. The idea of this white girl bringing home a black man to meet the family. And now you look at it and it's a little cringy, because it's like, I mean, they have to set Sidney Poitier's character up to be like this perfect thing.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Like he's a doctor, and I think he was like somewhere overseas helping sick people. Like it was, I mean, it was just like, he's just this perfect thing that you could never have any flaws in.
Right.
And so you would see that in the kind of message movies for a long time. And I think that happens with gay characters sometimes, is that they're either, before people were more self-aware, they were either like creepy villains.
Yeah.
Or they were these perfect things that just existed to be the best friend or something like that.
Right.
And so,
and this, the characters are flawed because they're human.
And everybody's flawed, right? Everybody has their own stuff going on.
About what you guys said about the nature of the gay characters having to have pitch perfect representation. That honestly, it's what bugged me so much about the discourse surrounding Happiest Season with Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the criticism came from it not having the ending that they wanted, because it's easy to see Harper as the villain. She's real. But the Mackenzie Davis character, she's still, I see her as a flawed human being, like petrified of what would happen if her parents found out she was gay. And I feel like by showing her as a flawed human, it's showing how everyone's coming out journey is not all sunshine and roses.
For sure. I know my problem with that movie, was it Aubrey Plaza who pops up as the friend from high school?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I like that relationship better. Like, oh.
that's my problem with that is, I mean, it's not like that isn't the issue. It's just people hated it because it wasn't the ending they wanted.
Right.
Yeah. That's hard sometimes when you project certain things onto movies and feel like that. Why'd you do it this way?
By and large, the reviews have been positive, but the complaints people seem to have, even if they like it, is that it so much follows the beats of a rom-com.
Very much so.
And I'm just like, but then you're missing the point. Well, it's like, I like Singing in the Rain, but do they need to sing all the time?
Right.
Like
the beauty of this film is showing you can have a traditional rom-com with gay characters.
Right. Like, the whole point is, like, not everything needs to have this tragic ending. Like,
has to be, like, what Matt was saying earlier, your idea of what a gay movie should be. Should it be flamboyant? Should it be ultra colorful? Should they sing? I mean, what do you want it to be? It's like, no, it's a romantic comedy.
I mean, they do sing,
but what is your idea of what a gay romantic comedy? No, the point is they're humans and it's a romantic comedy.
I think to that point that we've had the romantic comedy has kind of been altered since Crazy Stupid Love. Mm-hmm. I think that which is one of the greatest comedies of all time. But like, that doesn't follow the traditional beats of a romantic comedy, right? It is at its core, but it just doesn't follow that. And I think this is definitely a throwback to like, what was the Kate Hudson, Matthew McConaughey movies,
all that stuff.
Yeah, or all the Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan stuff.
Absolutely.
Don't they even show You've Got Mail in this movie?
Yeah. Or When Harry Met Sally, all the Nora Ephron stuff.
Yeah. I think so. It is, I mean, people who watch movies, right, know that the quote unquote romantic comedy from the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, did follow, like, okay, they don't like each other, they're gonna hang out, they're gonna like each other, there's gonna be some conflict that's gonna make them split up.
That construct goes all the way back to It Happened One Night with Clark Gable, 1934. They've been remaking that movie for almost 100 years. Yeah.
Or His Girl Friday.
Yeah. All of it.
Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell
always
being at odds with each other.
It's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? Yeah. Like, that's exactly what people love.
And then the way they make it fresh is they put it in a new setting.
Right.
Right? Right. Like, and it's like he's a firefighter and she's an arson inspector with a heart of gold. This summer, it's Matthew McConaughey and Sandra Bullock in Too Hot to Handle. Right?
Were they ever in the same movie together?
I don't know. They were in my head just now.
Yeah. I just saw the whole thing.
Let's edit that out.
All right.
Just in case. All of a sudden, here's Matthew McConaughey. He's like, I'll go back to the rom-coms for a little bit.
I'll make that. I just want a story by credit. But that's part of what makes this movie feel fresh, even though it's laid over these beats that are almost 100 years old, is because this is a view we've never seen represented in a rom-com.
Yeah. Which I think is great.
Right.
So plot-wise, speaking of representation, the real representation here, another podcaster in movies. Oh, every character in a movie.
That part, that's one of my complaints about that opening scene where he's podcasting. Like, one, podcasts don't have live phone calls.
That's also true.
That's not a thing.
Can't do it. Was weird when he had a caller. I guess it was more like a radio show that's in a podcast form, but he was doing a radio show essentially.
Yeah. But then,
no, because they say the podcast is blown.
No. But I mean, like, you can live stream a podcast and you could have calls, like in theory, but then you're basically doing a radio form, but releasing it as a podcast. He's doing a radio show.
Also, it was some very lazy exposition.
Right.
Like, I mean, fair. That was some very lazy. And also, he has this huge podcast that then never gets mentioned again.
Okay. I'm glad you said that. Two-thirds through the movie, I go, is he ever going to podcast? He had 400,000 people watching his podcast in the opening, and he never podcasts again.
That's also, like, you do have to stay consistent.
You don't pod fade at that point.
No, you don't.
You're fully monetized, man. You're talking about Blue Chew and Liquid Death and BetterHelp.
Oh, man, Matt Reedy's feet is going to go crazy. Yeah.
I just, it was so funny how they never even show him like in a scene, like being part of the plot, like, oh, I have to go record my podcast. Right. Like, how do they never mention the half a million listeners?
And you
got to
figure he's doing what, one a week? Maybe.
Well, I mean, you would think
at least. Like, at the least.
If you have 400,000 people, you're probably doing a daily, like a Monday through Friday podcast.
Patreon, but, that you're not
anyway,
recording.
But it was funny that they did use it as kind of a way to set it up because honestly, he could have just been a museum curator. He didn't have to be a podcaster.
It was just they had to give you an information dump.
What can we do? What can we do? Oh, he's a podcaster.
So it was very interesting.
That
to
we'll never talk about ever.
But
again.
I thought, like, you know, when Halloween 2018 came out, we're like, oh, a podcaster on the big screen. Seriously, how many movies now do we review and there's a podcaster in it? But I guess it just shows you how mainstream podcast.
Yeah,
but it is. But, man,
it was very funny though because what was the last one?
Those poor podcasters.
We just
on Halloween.
Covered a movie that had a podcaster in it. I swear,
Vengeance
was okay. So that was like the premise of it. That was a few episodes ago.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh my gosh.
Maybe the for Halloween. Kills or ends, they'll bring a podcaster back to.
I hope
about,
so to finish
talk
up.
About, talk about the podcasters that Michael Myers killed.
Blair Witch. We found the podcast. You know, they were doing a podcast on the road and interviewing.
Yeah,
we found the podcast and we're going to finish it.
They. Oh my god, take that out too. I don't want the. Make sure that nobody takes that idea. Oh, was that the premise of the last one?
Oh, I don't know. I just made it up.
That's what I'm saying. Don't put that out. Don't put that out there. God dang it.
The hidden podcast.
All right. But yeah, so yeah, we're introduced to Billy Eichner and he's this podcaster and he basically says, I don't want a relationship. I don't want, I'm happy being single, but I'm not really happy being single. Like he kind of like alludes to that.
Yeah.
And then it's revealed that he has become the curator for the very first, LGBTQA+, history museum. And it's not like, He wants to get into the actual history of the struggle and the people who were on the front lines in the very beginning of this whole thing of the of people coming out and expressing themselves and their own sexuality. And it's also like you get a really fun group where they're all just trying to get their own stuff into the museum. And I like them as a group where they're all not friends, but they're like that's the way I took it is like. We're cordial because we work together, but we are not.
But they don't have anything in common other than straight world thinks they have sex weird.
That's right.
Right? Like that's the only ultimate thing they have in common, which I thought was a funny dynamic and something you don't see in movies very much is the kind of infighting in that world of, you know, there is this thought of like people think, oh, put a straight white guy or put a cisgendered gay white guy in your movie and you've represented the LGBTQ
Done.
World and it's
that's
like
not
but,
the case
but,
anymore
yeah but you left out a lot of letters right and so
and that's what Billy Eichner in the movie even says that right,
right.
He keeps referring to himself as cis white gay
right.
guy right and so they're pointing that out there's so many different types in that spectrum and the representation is really good with that group at the museum right because you're showing all different sorts of people
right
I think that's what he complains about like the Hallmark movies starting to incorporate
he does,
that
yes.
like
yeah.
they have a very straight washed version of it and so I think that's I'm clearly very purposeful
right.
of is that he also knows even as someone who is in an oppressed community, he has this privilege that of that oppressed world that,
oh, sure.
He's the least
he has
oppressed.
It easier.
Like, right. There's way more people right. that are accepting of his lifestyle than are accepting of a trans lifestyle.
Sure. Sure. Sure.
And using the Hallmark movies was very clever to show like, oh, it's their very minimal effort for that representation, right?
the,
with those
the,
movies.
The Polly one at the end.
Yeah.
yeah.
Just the best.
Polly Holly
Christmas.
And it was called
hilarious.
It was like Hall Hark or something. It was like
Hall Hart.
Hall Hart. Okay.
Hart Mark?
No, it was
Hall Hart.
Hall Hart.
I think it was Hall Hart.
Okay.
But because at first when he said it and they're kind of making fun of them, I'm like, did they just use Hallmark?
I did think the same thing. I was like, man, that's a bold move.
The first one, I think they probably purposely said it. It sounded just like Hallmark.
Yeah, right, right.
And then you saw it and they kept saying it. I'm like, oh, they did change it.
Do they, I honestly pay no attention to that. Do they, are they only on TV? Like, are they like attached to ABC or is it just whoever picks it up?
The Hallmark channel, right?
There's a Hallmark channel.
But they're not, like the Hallmark channel isn't like a, a subsidiary of somebody else, right? Or are they
their I don't know. Someone probably owns them. They all own
everything.
But they're their own channel, though. So they they make tons of movies, especially over the holidays. Don't they do like one a day starting in November?
They have the content that they've already created. And then they also have like, every year they make like, it's like 30 to 60. Yeah. And then Lifetime does it too.
Now there's
a new one starting up.
Yeah, Netflix.
Well, no, but there's a new like Hallmark style channel.
Oh.
Because they just poached like Candace whatever from Full House.
Candace Cameron Bure.
There we go, yeah. And they poached a couple other people that were in all these Hallmark movies to come over there. And I think what's driving that is Hallmark has been getting more inclusive. As much as this movie bags on their version of inclusive, like Hallmark's been getting more inclusive, and this new channel is starting up that's like, no, come over here. And so like, because that is very conservative. So they're poaching the more conservative ones over to do the old fashioned, you know, big city girl learns that
Christmas
she should be home making cookies.
But that's another reason why I think that Luke McFarlane is such perfect casting, especially when I looked him up and he's been in the Hallmark movies, because he's such a believable romantic lead, and it's like, literally is.
Right. So, yeah, Billy Eichner goes to like a dinner, and we're introduced to kind of his group of friends. And it is interesting to see like when the two dudes introduce that they're in a throuple.
Yeah.
Like even Billy Eichner was like, what are you doing? So it's interesting to see even someone who is in the gay community is also like, you're out of your mind with this choice that you're making with your life. So I did find that also kind of interesting. But yeah, you've got because
it doesn't like that is a subject which would be. They would raise eyebrows no matter what community or your orientation or whatever. It's like, that's a whole nother person in a relationship. And relationships are hard enough with two people.
We're both dating him. And he's just like,
yeah. Oh my God. Okay. The cutaway gag with the grandma. Yeah. Oh my gosh. As soon as that happened, I'm like, okay, we're in this movie.
Well,
to
me, that feels like Judd Apatow.
Right.
There are certain beats in this movie where I was like, well, there he is. Yeah. There he is. There he is. So, but
it's also like, Nicholas Stoller, I think he wrote those Muppet movies.
Yeah.
Right? So like, he's a very funny guy, and those Muppet movies are amazing. The new Muppet movies, they did a great job with them. So Nicholas Stoller co-writing this with
Absolutely.
Billy Eichner, I think those two did a great job, and Billy Eichner brought a lot of his experiences and obviously these points that he does a really good job portraying this character and driving these points home that we've talked about. And then I think Nicholas Stoller with the comedy that we've seen and his other comedy, I mean, he's great at comedy. And no, so
absolutely.
The two worked very well.
I will say, like, trying...
I'm a bit of a Nicholas Stoller fan.
So. Yeah, he's great.
Particularly because of how he, along with Paul Feig, helped introduce Rose Byrne as a comic genius.
Oh my gosh, yes, the spy, Rose Byrne and spy.
Even in Bridesmaids.
She's great
in Bridesmaids.
Or Neighbors.
Oh, Neighbors. Yeah. That's fantastic.
I like Neighbors. Wasn't there a second one?
I never saw the second one, but the first one was funny.
The second one's got, Hit Girl.
Oh, okay.
Is Chloe Moretz?
Yes, thank you.
I like Zac Efron. I think he's good. Like, you know how a lot of people, he got in the same, the Pattinson and the, we were talking a little bit about Harry Styles, even though he's not quite there yet. He's just starting more with the acting. But I mean, when people typecast people, oh, you're this, right? You've been in this teen movie.
You're the pretty boy.
Right. And so Zac Efron.
The bane of my existence, man.
I know. Tom deals with it.
Now you're seeing it. Welcome to my world.
The pretty boy of the podcast. Zac Efron got typecast in that High School Musical, right?
Yeah.
The other ones and their things. But he's really good. I think he's good in comedy.
He's very funny.
Good in dramatic stuff.
What
liked him in that DJ movie. Is your favorite.
Oh my God, that movie's so bad. Is that Time Travel?
Which one?
Was that the one that was? What's the one where, like,
I don't think Zach
Project Almanac? Is he not in that?
I don't think he's in that. No.
What was the DJ one?
We
Are Your Friends.
Oh.
Yeah.
Directed by Max from Catfish.
Yeah, what a garbage movie that was.
So bad.
Go back and find, if you can find that in the feed somewhere. That is early on in Real Spoilers, but that movie sucks.
It was bad.
Not because Zach Efron.
No. He's Johnny Storm. If they don't cast him as Johnny Storm, that is a missed opportunity.
I didn't know it was directed by the Catfish guy.
Yeah, that was, he left Catfish for
to do that,
and then came back, now he's gone again. But yeah,
woof.
Yeah. He's directing We Are Your Friends too.
Yeah,
We Are Still Your Friends.
Boom, man! If they get a We Are Your Friends too, I quit.
Yeah, then that's... Hollywood is officially out of IPs yeah, to yeah, reboot.
No kidding. No, yeah. No joke.
So he announced, you know, they had this really funny scene where they're all arguing over who, you know, bisexuality awareness week, and then
back at the museum.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Billy Eichner is just kind of living his life, and he ends up going to this club, and he's talking, who I thought this friend is the guy that I wanted to be like.
He was
the
hilarious.
Friend.
That one.
That dude is amazing.
I think it's Guy Branum.
Oh man,
who plays? Yeah, Henry. He was hilarious.
I was really hoping that they would also, give him a straight best friend. In the same way that the straight people always have the game.
Right.
I loved Guy Branum. Yeah. I especially loved how, even though he's the plus sized gay sidekick in a raunchy comedy, his fatness is never a punchline.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
That's a good point.
I love that very much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that was great. I noticed that too when I was watching. I'm like, yeah, they're not being mean about the way he looks or anything. He's just the best friend. And his remarks about the old guy.
He looks like a ripped Dumbledore.
Yeah. Every single time he opened his mouth, every line from him, he was hilarious. And I think he even made Billy Eichner break at one point because his character was not laughing in the movie. And he says something, one of those lines. It might have been the Dumbledore one. And you see Billy Eichner laugh. And it seemed like he made him break. I can imagine.
I will say, though, when they showed that guy, I was like, no, I get it.
Yeah.
Man, he's a ripped Dumbledore. That's impressive looking man.
Hilarious.
So and it's this point that typical romantic comedy, your lead sees who's going to be the love interest from across the room. Mm-hmm. And of course, this guy, I do like where I think before he goes to the club, she's like, oh, you're going to that one of the friends. It's like
he goes
going
to his sister.
Is that right?
Yeah, he goes to his sister's house, and then another thing that they don't...
Are you going to that club where you're going to take your shirt off? He's like, I don't take my shirt off.
You think of the stereotypical clubs, and they cut to it, and everyone's dancing
with their shirts off.
Yep. But what they do that you never really see, though, is they, with the kid, right? Like, he says, should we be talking about this around him?
Like they're like a little too accepting? Like,
yeah, where he says, I wish that like gay sex was more taboo among straight people. Yeah.
but so they're talking about it, and I just thought that was refreshing because it comes up again when Billy Eichner's talking to Luke McFarlane's mom and later. But it's like they're not shying away because just like in the way that kids, I mean, yeah, you're right. Maybe it's a little too much but for the comedy. But the point is you don't shy away from saying that these straight people are in a relationship around kids, right? And so it's like...
But they were straight up talking about anal sex in front of their kids.
For the joke, obviously.
It was the bottom dance.
Yeah. Right.
He was like, oh, God.
That was the joke to make it awkward, whatever. But the point, though, I liked they made where they were just at least open about talking about, these people are gay. And later on, again, when he brings it up around the kids, this is a good time to introduce them.
Real quick, is the woman that plays Luke McFarlane's mom was the neighbor off Married with Children, right?
Is that who she was? She looked familiar, but I couldn't place her.
But like in Married with Children, I think she comes out as gay.
I think the actress is as well.
That's what I thought.
That's why they wrote that storyline.
Okay, that makes sense. But I'm pretty sure
Amanda Bierce, and she's in Married with Children.
Yeah, she was
second.
She was the neighbor,
Marcy.
Marcy. Oh man, okay. Marcy was the worst.
That was really fun at the end.
Although points to Joe for referencing her from being in Married with Children and not from Fright Night.
I knew she was. I know she. Trust me.
That's her number one known for.
It is that she was the girlfriend in Fright Night.
Okay.
If you've never seen Fright Night, do yourself a favor and do it.
Oh yeah,
it's amazing. Fun.
Yeah,
that's so good.
Yeah.
So Bobby, who is Billy Eichner's character, sees Aaron McFarlane from across the room,
and they
and the friend Henry says like, oh, he's. Everyone says he's boring
him. He does come off bored like in this initial interaction between the two. He does kind of come off boring,
which is the point of the character,
the
because
point.
He's working his suit and tie job, he hates his life, and he's not I wouldn't say trying to hide, but
I think
he's
the exact same person, almost like his characteristics are the exact same as Bobby's in that he doesn't really want a relationship. He's just kind of doing his own thing. Like he's telling Bobby, right, he's like, I'm gonna go have sex with this guy and his husband when we leave here, and he was just like, what, wait, what? So
he's very
like,
matter of fact.
Yeah, he's very matter of fact, and he pulls a Batman where like they're in this conversation and Billy Eichner does say something that's kind of dickish,
yeah,
and he turns around and Aaron's gone. Like he yeah. And we don't see him leave. Like even as a viewer of the movie, we don't see
well,
him
right.
Walk
it's a
away.
Cut. They cut to close up on Bobby, and then they cut back and
which seems
wide
like
view
a like a
gone.
Very like comedy trope.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like if you set that somewhere in like an office, it's the same thing. Where it's like, wait, what the hell happened?
Yeah, right. And he does it to him multiple times. He keeps disappearing on him. And the thing, and I guess the thing is that you're right. Even more so than Bobby, Aaron's thing is that he's just. So not looking for anything. He likes the way his life is. He's not trying to get into anything. And Bobby keeps saying things where he's just like, oh no, this guy wants more. I'm not committing.
Oh, you think that way? I definitely feel I that way. It. Like as they're progressing.
Remember when he tried to kiss him and he didn't want it? Like he's very
That's
much like,
true.
I don't even want, this is getting too close to a relationship. Even in the beginning, like even I think he could just read that Bobby wanted more than he was comfortable with.
Right.
He wanted to go hook up with the guy and his husband. That's his, you know, no strings attached. And I think the kissing and the moment they had, they almost like a little meet cute moment. Like
right. Very much so. Yeah.
And so that was like, nope, I'm out of here.
Yeah. So that becomes our focus for the most part is Billy Eichner's trying to get this museum up and going. And I guess it's been pushed back. Like the opening has been pushed back a couple times. Yeah. So there's a little bit of fear that this isn't going to happen. I think the Deborah Messing scene is amazing.
Yeah,
it was great.
Deborah Messing. I love that scene so much.
Yeah,
it was great. And it's so true about any kind of actor.
Yeah, it's like, I have no idea if it's true, but it's true.
I think it might be true for her.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, how long did that series run?
It was like 7 or 8 seasons.
And then they
brought it back for, I think it only ended up lasting 1 season as a reboot. Maybe it was 2.
Maybe 2.
Well, we've talked about this with TV characters. There's something so personal as an audience, and I'm not saying necessarily any of us are like this, but when you come into someone's home for a decade,
yeah,
once a week and reruns, you
for
feel
sure.
like you have this connection to them and they become the character. Like
right.
you don't, there's no disconnect. You just see that you see her as Grace and she's like, I'm not yeah. Grace. I played a character.
Well, and then add to the fact that like, that was the only version of Gaines on television.
I was thinking the same thing.
So, so if you were in any part of that community, like you probably watched that and it was
True.
Really important to you. So it's,
did they, I feel like that, I remember watching that show from start to finish. Like,
yeah.
But
I watched
it. Did they partner that with something?
I mean, it was like
TGIF, right?
Part of the Thursday night NBC lineup, I thought.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I never really think back to, like I said, I watched that when it aired and thought it was really funny. And
I think it was like a middle show. I feel like it was either like in between
it
Friends
went like
and Seinfeld.
Friends, Will and Grace, Seinfeld, or something like that. Yeah.
But that must be one of the first like mainstream gay representation in a TV show, like to have the main characters be the
so the first people. Reoccurring gay character on a sitcom. You want to go down this rabbit hole with me? Because I'll do it.
The first
reoccurring
focus.
Gay would have been Billy Crystal on Soap.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And if you go back and watch that, it is not aged well. Their heart was in the right place, but they had no idea what gayness looked like. He starts off being very effeminate. I mean, like. Very
well, yeah. The first clue you said it's Billy Crystal.
Yes.
So I mean,
and then at one point his character wants to have a sex change, which that's not as we would define it now necessarily, quote unquote, gay.
Right.
Right. That's trans. And then he has the epiphany that that's not what he wants. And so, and then I will say after that storyline at the very beginning, they tone that down, and he's still gay. But he's not quite as prancy as he is at the beginning.
But the show Will and Grace, Will is
this is the first show
gay,
focused around. Yes,
that's a huge milestone in history and representation. So you're right; that would be a very important TV show to people in the community.
Yeah.
And I can see how they would even latch on to her as a character even more. But it is funny because we've brought that up how. It's like these are actors playing a role,
right.
And people come to them like they're best friends. Something about television where it's like, hey, how's it going? And this person's like, this is a total stranger. I don't know them, but you feel like you know the person.
You know who I feel like who I think that probably affects the most?
Who's that?
Wrestlers.
Oh, true.
You know, those guys play characters on TV and then they have to go into public.
And they play the character.
The Hulk Hogan on TV is not Hulk Hogan at home. Yeah. But when he does appearances... He's got to be Hulk Hogan.
Right.
You
that's
know?
True. Like, it follows them off the TV into their public appearances and everything. Yeah, they're like method acting their
kinda,
whole life.
And
really.
Obviously.
Maybe even Simon Cowell.
That's a great point.
Yeah. Or like, what's the Gordon Ramsay? I heard he's nice in real life, but he does have a kind of a character that follows
for
him.
For sure. Watch him do MasterChef Junior compared to MasterChef.
Yeah, I heard he's really nice to the kid.
Don Rickles.
Don Rickles is a great guy.
And people would get to the point where they're like, I want Don Rickles mean to thing. Insult yeah, me. If you, Larry like, the, call me a hockey puck.
Larry the Cable Guy and Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah.
They are two prime examples.
Yeah, the character that follows them. So you're right. But yeah, so anyway, that was a very funny rinse. And I wonder if, you know, if that's Billy Eichner also writing.
He's like, can I get Deborah Messing in this movie?
Well, maybe as much. My point, I mean, she's a great because of her history in the gay community with the show and everything, but I wonder if that's him not wanting to be Billy on the street in his real life.
That's a character. Yeah, he sees that. Yeah.
I think that's got to be truthful to him. Because, I mean, look at him in this movie and even look at him in interviews. Yes, he plays it up a little bit like his Billy on the street character, but he's a lot more
reserved.
Yeah, he is not the Billy on the street, seriously. And I think it's a funny segment.
That's a great bit.
But
I love that.
He's just yelling at people in their face, screaming at them.
Name a woman. And they're like,
And he just like yells at them and runs away. It's so funny. He did promotional Billy on the streets to promote this movie.
Yeah.
And I only saw two. I don't know if there's more, but he did one with Jack Black and one with Paul Rudd. And they're very funny.
He's the best.
Name a Jack Black movie. Name one. And the person can't. And you know that even if you knew the movies, being confronted like that on the street, you would freeze. Like,
yeah, I was like, who?
And it's so funny when they thought he was Zach Galifianakis, one of them, because he's got the big beard. And right. He's like, the Hangover? And he's like, no!
That was an interesting line in this movie where Bobby and Aaron are walking down the street and they're asking, you know, what's your favorite movie? And Aaron says The Hangover. And it's one of those things that I don't even think about, but Billy Eichner's character is absolutely right. Like, it's the highest. I don't know if it's the first thing, but it's pretty close.
And one of the first things when you meet Bradley Cooper as the teacher.
Yeah, well, he is stealing money from children. But when he pulls up to Stu's house.
Right, the joke, and
he's like, that's from 2009.
Yeah,
that's
not that long ago.
And it's like,
look how far we've come, though. Like, you just absolutely could not do that nowadays.
Absolutely not.
Well, I guess,
hold on a second. They did it in Barbarian.
But he was the bad guy.
To show he was the bad guy.
Correct.
Now, I will say in the somewhat defensive Hangover, Bradley Cooper's character is supposed to be a douche. But you're also supposed to end up liking him.
In the long run.
And so it's
supposed to like the guys in Blazing Saddles that use the N-word, right? There's no redemption for them, so you can make them do villainous
things. Yeah, it's like you don't get mad at 12 years a slave because somebody uses the N-word. They're a slave owner.
Right.
You're mad at them, but you're not mad at the film. Right.
Like,
it's part of a larger tapestry of what they're trying to tell you.
Right.
But I also
not necessarily with The Hangover.
No.
Yeah. But
no.
This is pretty smart writing too, though, because not only is this making a good point about media and how far we've come and what was acceptable just a decade ago, Aaron also says, I'm not offended by it. It's my favorite movie. I'm not that sensitive, which I think was kind of cool because he could see the whole movie isn't ruined because of one bad aged poorly line, right?
Right.
Yeah, I do agree with. I mean, as we probably on social media, we probably have these conversations about problematic art. You can still enjoy it while still having a conversation while why it's so stuck in the past. But I think rather than leave it in the past, people can have discussions about how we can do better in the future, like them discussing The Hangover. With Aaron saying, yeah, I like the movie. It's a product of its time, but...
Exactly.
Agree. You know, it's funny because when you talk about problematic art, I mean, there are people now who say the same thing about Will and Grace, right? Like,
oh, sure.
You know, I mean, the main character is gay, but the actor isn't. Mm-hmm. And it is one of those very kind of straight-washed versions of what gay life looks like. But people forget that...
At the time,
like, you mean... Is it fair? No, but like you have to take baby steps sometimes. And if they hadn't made those concessions and to get that into the mainstream,
and it hadn't have been the popular show it was,
right? You wouldn't get the next step,
right?
You'd be robbed of all the good things that show brought, and so it wasn't perfect. But what is, as things age, we keep finding these imperfections.
I always think of the show Barney Miller.
Okay.
Well, we know that.
Sure.
But,
and
right.
So there are two gay characters on Barney Miller that are reoccurring. They pop up a couple times a season.
Okay.
And if you go back and watch it now, it can be a little cringy. Like they're, you know, but ultimately, all the there's one police officer who's very put off by them, and but for the most part, the cops are like they're pretty nice to them, but the characters are very over the top by today's standards. But at the time, mm-hmm. Barney Miller won awards from the gay community. They were working with the gay community to help them tailor these characters to be more truthful, but still work in a sitcom. Right?
Sure.
And so, but now you go back and you're like, I don't know. But at the time, that was as good as it got, man.
Right. Like, well, that's, we've said that before, right? Where you just have to take... Bad News Bears is my always my go-to, right? Like, there is some language in that movie that is absolutely unacceptable.
Sure.
But you got to look at when it was made.
I am the same age as those kids, right. And I can tell you that's what that world looked like.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
And you just have to, you know, and that to Matt, to your point, you just have to have a conversation.
But if you hide it, if you erase it from history, no one can talk about where we came from and how right. far and learn from it. And I think that's a great point Matt made. Put the disclaimers at the beginning of the movies.
Those cartoons, right? Looney Tunes.
But don't
cartoons.
Delete them. Yeah. Put the disclaimer. Learn from it, because people are going to repeat the same mistakes if you don't show these things and teach them and say this was bad and we know it's bad.
This is unacceptable. This language is unacceptable.
Right? You know, history repeats itself. Yeah. So I do agree. And actually, it's interesting, and this may be very topical, but right now the big discussion online, I'm sure Matt has seen it, is Blonde. People are going online and saying, if you like Blonde, you are a horrible person and you should have
your credit card taken away. Biopic.
I mean, there's a lot of people that the movie's like 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, right? You love it or you hate it, kind of a thing. Or, you know, there's not a lot of middle ground there. But people are entitled to their opinion. And someone said something really, I think it was Chris Evangelista online. He says, when did we stop being able to view and discuss difficult art? Like, art doesn't have to be
2016,
but when you present art, it doesn't have to be either or like problematic. Maybe he said problematic. Sorry, I'm just off the top of my head. But when did we stop being able to discuss problematic art? Like, art doesn't have to be perfect and have no issues to be discussed or even to be enjoyed or appreciated. We can discuss it and we can talk about it.
Well, that's the whole point of art,
right?
Is to invoke a discussion.
But you've got a whole new mindset of people saying, well, there's this problem in it. And so if you like it, you are the problem. Or if you watch it or talk about it, you are the problem, instead of letting this art exist and people discuss it.
So you're saying we're not covering it next week?
I don't think we are, but not because of that conversation. That.
we'll kind of, this is, again, this movie does follow the beats almost identical to your typical romantic comedy, where they get together, and then they get a little, you know, things are moving in the right direction. They get a little too close. Aaron pulls back. We get to the Deborah Messing scene, which is just fantastic. And then they end up reconnecting.
Deborah Messing gets so mad, and then she walks away, and then they're all standing there and like, what'd you do to Deborah Messing?
Right.
And she comes back, she's like, the door is locked. Okay, I'll get this. No, I don't want you to do it. I want her to do it. Very funny.
They go to a Pride Fest in Plainville.
You got me.
Wherever that was.
Yeah.
And we get a pretty fantastic
province.
There we go.
Yeah. Rhode Island.
Pretty fantastic cameo. From, I know him as the brother from Independence Day.
Harvey Fierstein?
Thank you.
Oh, which, yeah. I mean.
Which I got to.
That's a very Joe thing to, that's where you know him
from. He
didn't
say Mrs. Doubtfire?
That was the other one I was thinking of.
Okay.
But he's always the brother.
But Harvey Fierstein is awesome.
He's a famous playwright. He wrote the book for La Cage aux Folles, which you would know as Birdcage. And he has a very famous play called Torch Song Trilogy, which was turned into a very mediocre movie.
Oh.
But the play is really good. So
the brother from Independence Day.
Yeah. So I mean, but think about that. He was writing the play La Cage aux Folles. I mean, in the 70s,
right? When was
right?
that?
Birdcage was a huge movie adapted from that.
Yeah.
Was there that's a remake though, right?
Like, so it was a French film.
There it is.
And then they made like three or four of them as French films, and then they took that and turned it into a stage musical, which then became a huge hit.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know,
Harvey Fierstein was in.
Yeah.
Oh, was he really?
Mm-hmm. You could also look back at that and say it's kind of a straight washing version.
Sure.
You know, so it's
when you look at Nathan Lane and
yeah.
Robert, not Robert,
Robin Williams.
I was like, Robert De Niro.
You know, they were supposed to play opposite.
Oh, they true crimed it.
Yeah.
True detective.
Yeah, they were. It was supposed to be the Robin Williams was going to play.
The way back.
Yeah. The drag queen.
Oh, really?
Character, and he was like, I think this might. I'd like to do it the other way.
Okay.
And Nathan Lane was like, sold, you know?
But look at, I mean, look at that movie and how mainstream The Birdcage
was.
It was
huge,
right?
Sure. I don't think people today realize that was a massive,
massive
movie. It was a massive.
Movie.
It wasn't a big gay movie. It was a huge movie, right?
Mainstream,
so,
massive
so
hit.
So yeah. I haven't watched that movie in a long time, and I like the play. I've seen the play, but I haven't watched the movie in a long time, and there's probably dated things with it too, but
sure.
Again, you got to look at it at the time and how big it was and the representation. So I think to the
teaching
whole
him to walk like John Wayne. That was great.
That's fantastic. That's so good. What a great scene. So they go to this Pride Fest and they take their relationship to a different level.
Are you talking about the sex scene?
Yes.
Okay. I think this is another really huge step for them to take because again,
we do it twice too.
But this is the big one, right?
There's the funny one where Aaron invites Bobby to go to the threesome.
Right.
And Bobby's not having a good time.
Right.
And they pull back. And, of course, Aaron is getting blown by these two dudes. He's like, I'm going to go ahead and go.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you're leaving? And then there's the four-way.
Okay. But this is the romantic love scene.
Yes.
Right?
Very much
Which
so.
Which they don't shy away from it. I mean, it's a very it's a sweet.
Yeah,
it's a very well handled love scene.
I mean, it sounds like maybe Bobby was the bottom and Aaron was the top, and they've switched it up. Which I feel like I don't know. Maybe that's like a big deal in having that kind of sex. I have no idea.
It seemed
idea.
Like it was for him.
For who?
For the Luke character.
Yeah. That's what I felt like too. Is like he's asking him to do what he's going to do, and it was definitely like a very touching moment between those two.
But it wasn't played for laughs. Like
right.
that's
no.
what I think was so special in this mainstream rom-com, right? And then and with all the great things that we've talked about for it, is they don't shy away from it and they let them have a love scene and it's intimate and
very
it's
much
sweet.
So.
And you know, when it's all done and they're laying there, I mean it's a sweet, touching moment, and it's just something that we haven't seen on a studio level.
No, I agree. It's no different than watching Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey.
Right.
It's the exact same.
Why should it be? Right. And that's what I think is so special about this movie and all the things we've talked about for representation to the topics they handle. But when they put it out there and let them have a love scene, just like all the other romantic movies get to do.
You know? I think the larger takeaway should be that this is not an eat your vegetables experience.
No.
Right. Like this is a laugh out loud funny movie.
Yeah.
I laughed out loud
multiple times
and I'm a hard laugh to get and
he's dead on the inside, folks.
Yes, absolutely.
You've listened to the show. You're right.
So I mean, you know, so for all of that stuff that's there, that's good. It's also like it's just a fun, funny movie. It also does this other stuff well. It doesn't have to undermine that part of the film
to get
a laugh. It never does that.
That's exactly. It's the love, the stuff there, the romantic part of the romantic comedy is there.
Yeah.
And the topics like we've talked about, they're not played for laughs or done in a mean-spirited way to get laughs like in the past other comedies have used.
Even an Apatow movie, right?
Sure. Apatow movies.
You're gay because.
Yeah.
Right? Which, I mean,
God
is.
Dang it.
Which is like. It's a very conflicting scene because you're watching going like, I don't know, but they're also it's also funny.
It's also Rogan and Rudd.
Yeah.
You know, so like they're two lovable dudes.
Right. They have this way of where it's not doesn't seem like it's coming from a place of hatred,
no.
but it's also like but the people that are gonna watch it and pick up on it aren't necessarily going to be as nuanced.
Sure.
Right.
Sure, sure.
But the important part is that they know that, right? And like they've grown. People deserve a chance to grow.
Yeah.
And looking at old movies, no matter if it's 100 years, 50 years, 10 years, through modern lenses is not fair because it wasn't the time.
It's not fair.
It doesn't make them bad people or Apatow just because it was in there. It was acceptable. There's a lot of things that were acceptable at all times of history and weren't right, but they were acceptable.
Right.
And so you can only grow and learn from that.
Right. So they get close. Like they're a couple. Like that's they're going to.
Despite their best efforts,
they
end up falling.
Well, the big deal was that there is a guy that went to high school with Aaron, right?
Aaron, okay. Yeah, they played hockey together.
They played hockey together, and he was supposedly straight, and they even run into it the movies when him and Bobby are out, they run into him and his fiance. Well, they find out through just social media or something that he broke it off with his fiance, and he came out as gay.
Right.
And so Aaron has always had this crush on this guy and even told Bobby about it earlier. So when they have this holiday party and they're now kind of a couple and this guy shows up, he's like, what's your view on monogamy and what
and
is
I, like,
this?
I think that's a very good conversation to have because this entire...
But he has it. But it's not a good conversation to have
when you're drunk.
When you're face drunk.
Correct.
Like, and that was correct. The thing. It wasn't from like an academic standpoint of like, so what are your views on monogamy?
Right.
It's like, so I met this guy and what are your thoughts?
Yeah.
You know?
And Bobby is like, okay, like we'll give it a shot. And then...
The four-way scene is really funny.
Because he says, he's like, I don't want to just go off with him. I want us to be with him.
But okay, so like that's an interesting point, right? Like Aaron is not saying, I just want this new experience with you.
Right. I'm not leaving you behind.
Right. I want to do this with you, which I do think is better.
Well, I think Aaron's coming from a place of not being in a relationship or wanting one at all. This is a big step for him to be in this long-term, longish term, few months or whatever with Bobby. And
right.
So I think he's trying to do his best to not just totally give in to his base instincts, right. But like, you know, he's
and,
trying
you know,
to.
When the straight community looks askance at this sort of stuff from the gay community,
right.
Let's just be very frank. If men could get women to fuck like this, they totally would, right? So, like, if you live in an ecosystem where it's only men, then this is what sex will look like.
Yeah.
And if you could get women to think like men, then that's what straight relationships would look like. And if you think otherwise, you're wrong.
Like, then there's this other Steven, I think was his name.
Oh my gosh.
Who just keeps trying
up.
To interject himself into this. And they're just
the
like,
way he pushes himself in. He's
oh
like, hey,
God, that was so great.
It's very funny.
And then the buddy comes in, like, while they're in the middle of having this.
Yeah. Henry, the really funny.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, hi, Steven. And he was like, and like runs away. But. One of the big plot, the big the thing that like gives you your conflict is Bobby says, my entire life, my dad, they all accepted me.
Yeah, this is a good scene.
I think, and you know where it's going, right?
Yeah, like you're talking about the speech on the beach.
Yeah, where he just says they told me to tone it. They all accepted me, but
and
they
I feel
told
like
me to tone it down.
This scene, as good as it is. There is no acting going on in this scene.
No, I think
this is totally him describing his life.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Is this after the mom thing?
No. This is before the mom thing. So he tells him this. He says, my dad, my parents accepted me, but they always told me, dial it back.
The thing I liked about the beach scene is how it ends with, and they were wrong. Like,
I
ignored them.
Right.
Because I didn't know what else to do. And I was right and they were wrong.
Yeah.
And then also...
And Aaron accepts that.
And he's also bummed because his parents didn't live long enough to see it.
Right.
That he...
Yeah, his parents are both gone.
Yeah.
Right. He's an orphan.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's an orphan.
But, you know, it's...
You should adopt him.
Yeah. It's funny because... Not funny, but interesting because it's like, you know, they talk sometimes about how the universal is in the specific, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, so that's a very specific experience to a gay man. But I also, like, I really related with everything he was saying.
Well, yeah, you said that
like
earlier.
Parents'
yeah.
acceptance.
Like, yeah, because it's like my family was like, and I know this isn't, I'm not oppressed, and I know that this isn't related to sexual orientation, but my family was definitely like, no, take the job at the grocery store. Don't go be a DJ at an FM rock station.
Right.
What future could that possibly hold for you? No, don't go work at the rock club in East St. Louis. That's not a future. And it's like, but I ignored it and I did it
That's
anyway.
So funny.
And everything
that.
Led to you
and,
to where you are.
And I was right and they were wrong. So it's like, you know, like while I know nothing of the oppression or being, you know, shat on by society the way a gay man would, but I totally related to what he was saying. Yeah.
Everything you just said is, I think of it as Kevin Smith said this one time. He said, for the longest time, people would ask me, why are you going to do that? Why would you do that? And I just started asking myself, why not?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't? And that's how I got, honestly, that's how I got here.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, parents not understanding is
because they want what's best for you, and what's best is the safe choice.
They
it's not best, but it's the
quote unquote smart choice.
It feels safer to go like, yeah, you could probably end up a manager at a grocery store. That seems like a pretty solid existence. And it's safe and it feels achievable in the way introducing Jim Blossom Records doesn't.
Hey, now.
Right? So, you know.
He's like, wait a minute.
You say Jim Blossoms?
But yeah, that's a really good scene.
It is. So,
I think Billy Eichner's actually really good in this movie. Yeah. And I say that not thinking that I ever thought he was bad, but I didn't know Billy Eichner could act like that.
We don't know him as any other character but the Parks and Rec Billy
on the
street.
But that's what I'm saying. And this was a great showcase of his dramatic talents. And not only is he very funny as we know he can be, but he gets to do some heavy lifting. And he's really good in
those
scenes.
He's really good.
And I think what you said, I mean, he's speaking from the heart.
I'm not trying to disparage his performance by saying it's not acting. Right. I'm just saying I don't think it's very far afield from his personal experience.
He wrote the movie. So that's it.
Probably
It's not unfair to say.
In the same way that as good as Pete Davidson was in King of Staten Island. It wasn't a long walk.
It wasn't a stretch for him to be that character.
But seeing as that he wrote it, I think it's very fair because it's like, he wrote himself to say these things, and where did he get those ideas? You know,
Apatow's good with finding the comedians and bringing that personal story
out of them.
Because King of Staten Island, Trainwreck.
This is 40.
It's
Funny People.
Yeah.
I know Funny People kind of gets shit on.
It's like two movies.
It is. Yeah. But I think that's got a lot of heart to it.
Yeah.
You know? So
Christmas time.
Yeah,
they meet the family.
And of course, we know that Bobby has said, they told me to tone it down. And what's the first thing out of Aaron's mouth is, can you tone it down?
Well, heartbreaking.
It is. And it's just like, and you know it's coming.
Bobby's just being himself. And his parents, even though maybe they're a little more closed-minded, she's still enjoying being around him. Like, Aaron's the only one that has this idea of really, like, you need to not do what you're doing. And Bobby's like, she's loving the tour. Everyone's having a good time, but Aaron has this
dinner. It's the dinner scene that pushes it over the edge.
But you can tell growing up, Aaron has dealt with a lot of conflicting stuff with his parents. And so he's got this idea of you have to be this certain way because that's how he grew up.
Right.
Yeah.
So it leads to a massive blow up between the two, and they kind of go in their separate directions. Bobby goes to the club that they've met, and he just so happens to walk into the back, and who is Aaron making out with but the dude from the hockey team.
Right. But it's very much, we see it before Bobby goes out there, and Aaron's very much, I can't, I'm not going to do this. I'm not saying right or wrong, but we do see at least to preface it that he's like, no, I can't, whatever. And then they do. And of course, Bobby sees that first. But also, why did he put himself in that situation if he didn't? You know what I mean? Like,
it's a catch-22.
Aaron knew where he was going and who he was going there with. So even if he says, you know what I mean? It's a...
Right. It is what it, you know. Yeah. He made a mistake.
Yeah, right.
That's the bottom line. So they break up. Like, that's the end of that. Bobby is...
He goes to the gym to get ripped and...
Oh my god, that's
that scene. Hey bro,
yeah, when he puts on
hey bro, what do you got? Putting some weights on there.
There's actually a funnier, I think it was in the trailer where the guy he asked him to spot him, and he's like, I got you, and he's like, the guy's like, hey, can you spot me? He's like, nope. And he can't pick up
there's the I went back and saw some ad spots. There's a lot of stuff that didn't make it in. This is a 2-hour movie.
So when they're, and then of course they hook up.
But Bobby's doing this tough guy voice. He puts his hat on backwards the other lifter has on, and then they hook up, and then afterwards, their pillow talk.
He uses his real voice. He's like, oh my God.
The guy's like, what was that?
What happened to your voice? He's like, oh.
I'm sorry. I just thought, he's like, you get out of here right now.
And he was like, if I would have used my real voice, he's like, yeah, I would have still hooked up with you. He's like,
well, he said maybe.
Maybe.
He said maybe.
I thought he was like, yeah.
But also,
very convincing. It was like, maybe.
I took it more because they were trying to make the point, though, of don't change for anyone.
No, I didn't. Yeah, but I agree. But I also think the point is, it's like,
I
do like, not everybody's going to be, people like what they like. That's okay.
When he sees the Streisand poster, and he was like, oh,
yeah. That's why it's one of my favorite scenes of the movie, because it kind of hammers down the movie's message without.
Exactly.
Out for you.
Right. That's exactly what I really liked that too. Where it's like, don't change. Don't just be yourself. And if that person doesn't like you, this guy, maybe he would, maybe he wouldn't have. He says he would. But it doesn't matter. Like, if people won't like you for who you are, then you're not meant to be with that person.
It's okay. Yeah. You don't have to like everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'll kind of speed through this. They break up. the
well,
the
and Aaron has this through line earlier where he says, I couldn't be myself. I wanted to make these chocolates.
Right.
You know, this big, strong, tough guy. Because Aaron is very masculine, works out of the gym.
Sports.
He's
and
ripped
all
sports,
stuff,
yeah. all that. And so he's like, me making chocolates? And Bobby says to him at that point in the movie, he's like, why not? Why can't you make your chocolates?
You do whatever
like,
you want.
Right. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah. So the museum is opening. Like, they get the one scene we did not
Bo
talk
and Yang.
About, which was just great.
He goes to Bo and Yang, and he's this eccentric millionaire or billionaire. He has all this money. He needs $5 million from the museum, and Aaron's a financial guy. And so when you think he's not going to get the money, Aaron
steps up
and says, hey, we'll do whatever you want. And ends up being this roller coaster.
of gay
demon.
Drama or
yeah,
something.
It's
yeah,
horrible idea, but very funny. And I'm like, please show that later.
And
it comes back.
They do.
But yeah. They get the $5 million. They can open the museum.
Right. So the museum's going off. It's going to open. They have Bobby and Aaron have gone their separate ways at this point. Aaron must see it somewhere that it's opening, and they decide, Aaron is having a conversation with his brother, who I got to tell you, can't figure that out. The brother must be adopted. Right.
Oh, just 'cause he looks so different.
I mean, a lot different.
Yeah.
Could be.
Mom and dad are like, Mayo white.
Yeah, you know? I mean, who knows? It's just
But they're brothers, and he's like, just text him. Like, you're stupid. Why are you so dumb? So he texts him.
Well, I like because you can see they've been distant for so long.
Yeah.
And you realize
I'm telling you, there's like weird time jumps because the last time we see them, we see Aaron and Bobby together. It's Christmas.
Oh, and that's the big blow up with Bobby is being himself and the mom's a school teacher and he's.
But then they see each other at a bar later and he said like they have this discussion outside the bar, but they're not like there's no snow on the ground. They're wearing like lighter clothes. So there's like a big time gap between those two scenes.
I mean, it jumps around. Sure. And there's a lot of stuff, I think, cut out of the movie.
Global warming.
Also yeah. true. Yeah.
But the big blow up that breaks them up is with the parents and not letting Bobby be who he is. And they get into they're both in the wrong, I would say, in this situation.
Yeah. I mean,
right?
Bobby even says, he's like, yeah, I went out of my way to be too much.
Yeah,
he owns that.
Yeah. So it's like in this scene, it's hard to watch because, Aaron's saying tone it down, all this stuff, which is totally wrong to do. But then Bobby's being a total jerk and not respecting where he's like, there was a middle ground there and both of them were wrong. But that's the big blow up. And the mom is a second grade teacher. And Bobby's like, why won't you teach the kids about the gay stuff?
Which
and,
is like, that's a topic going on right now.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, critical race theory, all that
very
stuff.
Very much
is,
so. And
you know.
She's like, I think they're a little young. And he's like, okay, agree to disagree. But no, I can't. When he keeps going and it's a big blow up moment.
Yeah. So the final scene of this movie is Aaron decides, I'm going to go. They text each other and he was like, hey, do you want to meet up later? And he was like, yeah, sure. It's very much like the Grindr conversation, the bare bones conversation.
Well, they have this cute, it's their little meet cute thing where he's just like, hey, what's up? You know, it's just very basic kind of a text message they do throughout the movie. Aaron takes it upon himself talking to the brother. The brother's like, you need to go win him back, doing the whole
go make a big
run to the airport, the big show,
exactly.
Whatever the cliche thing is, you know, the big thing.
Pretty much.
But he decides, I'm going to make those chocolates. I'm going to be true to myself. I'm going to be a chocolatier and I'm going to make them for the opening.
Is that really what people that make chocolate are called?
Yeah, they're called chocolatiers.
Yeah. I had no idea. Yeah. When they said that, I thought they were just making up a word.
No, that's a word.
Yes. Have you ever watched Willy Wonka? I'm pretty sure they
do. They use the word chocolatier in Willy Wonka?
Well, even in, I'm pretty sure in both versions, but did you watch the new one?
No.
Oh, okay. So I was going to say, it's in a song.
Are you crazy?
It is like Willy Wonka, the amazing chocolatier. The
Tim Burton movie post-Batman?
I like the Willy Wonka Tim Burton. But
I liked it. I don't get why people hate it.
It's very true to the source material, and I think it's good and weird in all the right ways. Deep Roy, you know, it's all good. But anyway,
Timothy Chalamet.
Because that's the story I've always wanted to know.
the burning question.
Who knows? Maybe Paul King just wants funding for a third Paddington movie.
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah, one for me, one for them.
Yeah.
So he, you know, the museum goes off without a hitch. It's going wonderful. You've got the hall of gay trauma. Like, you know, you've got people coming out of that.
You see Bo and Yang's idea. They actually did it. He's standing like, wow.
Everything was great until 2016.
Yeah, right. But he's given a big speech at the opening.
Here comes Aaron.
Just performed Doja Cat or something, or Dua Lipa. He's just like, they don't show it, but he's like, thank you. They had some huge star there.
Yeah, I wonder if that was like, we'll just throw a name out there and see if
see
we
if
can
they
get
will.
Them.
Yeah.
And if they can't, we'll just say
it was
they
very
were just
funny
on
referencing off stage. Like, thank you, Dua Lipa. Yeah. It was just
so we get this song, and it's very. It's, you know, Aaron has said earlier in the movie that his favorite genre is country. So
that was a good joke. That was a
Bobby writes kind of like a country, like a Garth Brooks style.
Well, he says
country.
His favorite
Garth
his,
Brooks
is musician is Garth Brooks.
Yeah, and he's
and
like, Garth
Bobby
Brooks.
Even introduces it as like the famous gay icon Garth Brooks. Like, it's such a random choice.
If you ever get a chance, Tom Segura from Your Mom's House has like a beef.
My mom's house?
Your mom's house.
Okay.
Has like a beef with Garth Brooks.
What? Okay.
And it's the like to the point where Garth Brooks had to turn off comments in his like comment section.
Oh, all
because
Segura's
all of the all of the Your Mom's House people went there and started like asking him like, you know, where are the bodies, Garth?
Oh
and,
my god,
it's great.
I can't. Yeah.
It's so good. So he wrote this
song for him. You see him doing this, and we don't know how it's going to be used. But as soon as Aaron shows up, Bobby's like, I wasn't going to do this. I was never going
to. He did have it like right ready to go. I will say.
He had even trained other people to play the on the song with
him. We're going to do that thing.
But yeah. He's like, I wasn't going to do this, but now I have a reason to.
But I will also say that feels like very much the sort of thing you see in a romantic comedy,
it
right?
Is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it goes off without a hitch.
It's a good, sweet song. Like, yes. He does a good job performing.
And Billy Eichner's got a pretty good voice.
He sounds like, he sings it like Garth Brooks.
Yeah. Oh,
right?
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Like, I mean, it was Garth Brooks, right?
Garth Brooks is the guy that Aaron said he liked.
Okay. Yeah. I was just making sure. Yeah. So I'm not a big country guy, but I was pretty sure.
But he was watching Brad Paisley.
That's what was. Yeah. Yes, there was something confusing about that.
I thought that like he would like something a little newer than Garth Brooks.
Like
it felt like
whatever.
Something someone who doesn't know anything about country would say.
Right. I know that one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's funny because, I remember seeing Brad Paisley when he's looking something up, and that's why I was confused because he said Garth Brooks, so I know what he looks like. And I'm like, that's not. Okay.
I don't know.
But he sings a song. It's very sweet. And the lyrics are all about their relationship and all the things we've seen in the movie. And it's a
and
great...
They come back together, and there's a moment where Billy Eichner gets down on one knee. Again, very romantic comedy.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you know, will you date me for 3 months? And then we reassess.
And he's
like,
yes, I will date you for 3 months. He takes a ring from someone else in this huge
gaudy,
costume jewelry.
Yeah, right.
Thing,
And that's how that, you know, we get a flash forward to 3 months later and the museum is doing fantastic. And,
the
mom
joke,
is walking through
the joke that they come back on, like during the movie, Aaron basically says like, this museum's kind of boring. I mean, you've got all this great history and stuff, but where's the fun in it? And then Bobby's like, what do you want? Night at the gay museum?
And
it's
that's
just
what
a throwaway
get.
Joke, right? But then it comes back and Ben Stiller actually recorded something. There was a joke about Amy Schumer.
Playing
Amy
Eleanor Roosevelt.
And then you've got
Keenan
Thompson. And
there.
Then there's
Seth
Meyers.
Is Harvey Milk.
So and then they actually introduced that section of the wing as Night at the Gay Museum.
Yes.
It was a very funny follow-up on what seemed like a throwaway game.
Did Billy Eichner ever write for SNL?
I don't think so.
The only reason I ask, I feel like those are some pretty big SNL guys.
But Billy Eichner's pretty
but
he's
that's
wired
true.
Into
I guess
that
he's
a pretty big
successful.
In the comedic.
Yeah,
I mean, he's
that's
a big
true.
Comedian. So
and getting those.
I mean, he got Paul Rudd and Jack Black to do. I mean, he does all the celebrities on the street, right? So like,
sure.
He gets a lot of big names.
Riding in the car with Metallica.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
And I mean, he was on a show with Amy Poehler.
Mm. Also a good point.
So
that's fair. How long was he even on that show?
He was on the last, I think, 3 or 4 seasons. He comes in about the halfway point.
Okay.
I believe, yeah.
Okay. And so we see Aaron's mom walking a second grade class through, and she's like, this is wonderful. Like, this is such a good idea. And then like kind of the end of the movie is like, well, it's been 3 months. Like, would you like to reassess?
Well, and that tag was really funny too. When she goes, this thing like scans you or does a questionnaire or something about what percent might you be, or where are you on the scale? And it's like, you're a 0.2 bisexual.
She's like, oh.
Which was a callback, I guess, maybe to the, you're saying Unmarried with
Children.
Unmarried
with Children, she comes out as gay.
Okay, so but it's just a funny thing.
But
she
has like, she is the Ned Flanders to Al Bundy's Homer Simpson.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then they talk about kids.
Yeah.
And that's how it ends.
Where Aaron's like, do you ever want kids? And he's like, no.
No.
And he's like, oh, come on. And it's very sweet. I think the relationship was really sweet, handled well. It was a very funny movie. I liked both of them. I thought they had good chemistry. I did like the actor.
I totally hear you.
I think he was very charismatic. Obviously, it's super handsome, and he's a Hallmark love interest guy, right?
Right.
Perfect casting. I really enjoyed it.
No, I think this is. I miss rated R comedies.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I. That's where I land. Is like I think rated R comedies, when done right, are amazing.
Yeah.
So, and this is a great. example.
This is a big gamble.
It's a huge
by Universal
gamble,
to...
and it does not appear to be paying off.
Oh no, really?
Which is a shame.
Yeah, the box office is really
dang.
But like,
it actually kind of hurts me that it's
totally,
not
man. I get
well.
That.
But you know, hopefully, what they do is they take this as an opportunity to. I mean, they did something with this movie, right? Yeah. They made a statement. They put this movie out. This is a movie. I mean, first of all, not even just because of the two gay leads and the subject matter, but comedies now are dumped on streaming. That's
they
where
are.
Comedies
yeah.
go,
yeah.
right? People are not going to the theater for comedies because they know that they can watch 100 on Netflix. There's one every week or three a week that come out on streaming. And if you don't
break up your binging of Dahmer with yeah. like yeah. comedy.
But if you don't see it in the theaters in a few weeks, it's on streaming, right?
Speaking of LGBTQ,
that's
the tag.
They had to remove the tag.
Yeah, that's
probably not a bad idea.
Yeah.
But the point is that they studios are not releasing comedies in theaters. They're going straight to streaming. And this is a movie where that shouldn't have been relegated to streaming.
Yeah.
It's important enough. It's historic and its content and what they do with it. And I'm glad they put it out there. And hopefully they don't write it off as, oh, this was a bad decision. Hopefully they knew that it's not just because of subject matter. Comedies just aren't playing like
I also think October and
we've got all these horror movies out.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and it has been a murderer's row of horror movies recently. They've been really good. And I just don't know about the timing, right? Like, you've got Smile that I think it also was getting really good reviews and was doing really well. And like you said, it's October and people are going to go see a horror flick over a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
So I hope they don't take the wrong lesson. It's a good movie.
Yeah. No, it's a very good movie.
I think it would have been better if they released it in August.
Sure.
August
sure.
was it, or was it September? I think September, there was like nothing came out, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Wish they would.
But on the flip side, do we really think people were out there saying, do I go see Smile or do I go see Bros?
I don't know. Man.
I don't know.
I also
honestly
think
don't know
the best title.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I get what they're doing with it, but yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's fair.
I love it. I would say it's one of my favorite movies of the year. Go see it. Not just to support a movie that's kind of a historic moment, but go see it because it's a great movie.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. Like I said, it's not an eat your vegetables experience. This is a fun, funny movie.
That's what makes it so clever. Like you said, the thing that makes it great is that it doesn't have to stray from the conventions.
Right.
Right? This is a movie about human beings and a relationship.
Yeah, they take the template and just work their own story into the template.
Which is great. It just shows because people are people no matter what, right? It doesn't have to be, why does this seem like every other romantic comedy? Every other romantic comedy seems like every other romantic comedy.
Exactly.
There's no reason this can't work
for this
story.
Rare that something breaks that mold
for sure,
but this movie does in its own ways.
Yes,
it's very clever, very smart, and important, but not in an eat your vegetables way.
Yeah,
in an entertaining way
for sure. So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table, and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R Brackett.
And Matt, where can they find you?
On Twitter at FilmGuy619.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, Facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon, Patreon.com/RealSpoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Perry used to love Billy. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.